Turning our attention to Wisconsin's waters, and maybe waters elsewhere as well, and fishing those waters, with Gary Engberg of Mazamani, Wisconsin, professional fisherman and guide. He's an outdoors photographer as well, a columnist, a co-host of a Madison-based radio show, Outdoors Horizons. Always great fun to have him with us. And he's back to talk again about fish and fishing. And you can join in with your questions. And if you're, whether you be a novice, you know, we're certainly always happy to take questions from people who maybe never fished or maybe they want, I know we've had questions in the past from moms who questions about their kids and fishing and getting them involved, all the way up to the people who get out and fish 2, 3, 4 times a week. So, and everything in between. Anybody welcome here at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email at talk@wpr.org. And Gary, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure to be here.
How's the fishing?
Well, we've as far as rivers go, where I live in the Wisconsin River, we've had a we're very, very high. We probably have higher water right now than we had all spring. The flow going through the different dams in the Wisconsin River from Castle Rock down to Wisconsin Dells and then Prairie du Sac, the flow's in 20 to 30,000 cubic feet per second, and that's relatively high. Like, the water was never that high this spring. So they finally have gotten, well, you know how low the water was in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We finally are starting to catch up a little bit. But, you know, we also have had, you know, you've had an influx, you've had a lot of rain, you've had a lot of warm weather, and you know, that kind of gets that blue-green algae going in a lot of the area lakes, and we've had a little bit of trouble with that right now, and it makes fishing a little more difficult for people. You have to look for the areas where the wind are blowing that algae around or just looking for open pockets and open turns where you can fish.
One of the things, the new regulations out there that I really like relates to boats. You mentioned algae and problems in that area and weeds and so forth. When you've got pull your boat out of the water, you're expected to clean that boat off. If you have a boat and you're pulling out of a water, you clean that boat trailer off and the boat off before you move on.
Yeah, Larry, what you have to really be very careful, because we've had, I mean, there's invasive species coming over every month, you know, in the ballast of ships from overseas. And there's new ones all the time, and they're doing a good crackdown on a lot of invasive species. And that's just, a lot of it is Eurasian milfoil, which will get stuck on a lot of your boats and your propellers and underneath your boats. And then also we've had, you know, a few new viruses. We have VHS now, so you have to make sure that you drain your live well. You can't transfer baits from different bodies of water. Like in the Wisconsin River, I normally trap my own minnows or seine my own minnows, and the Wisconsin River connects as confluence with the Mississippi River, which is known to have VHS, so we cannot, you know, catch our own live bait, so we have to go out and buy bait. But when we're getting later on, we'll talk about, I think we're going to talk about muskies. You know, VHS was a deadly disease. They had it in Lake Huron in the upper Great Lakes, and it really wiped out a lot of game fish, took a tremendous toll on a lot of muskies. And so I don't think the DNR is going too far in making sure, you know, that we try and take care of this problem. And people have to realize, you can get stopped now driving down the highway if they right. see weeds hanging from your boat and you haven't cleaned, you know, cleaned things off. So always make sure you check your boat, check your trailer, empty your live well, pull the plug on your boat, do all these things before you get back on the road.
Yeah. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Greg in Kenosha. Greg, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I hear a lot about all the fishing shows. It's always boat. But what about shore fishing or dock fishing? Is there a website of anything like that I can go to, find out what's in my area, what's around the state?
Well, there's just been a couple stories recently about some great fish that have been caught off the government pier outside of Milwaukee. You had a young gentleman who caught a 48-inch muskie from shore every day. I mean, the way the Lake Michigan is right now is you've had a lot of colder water. You've had a lot of southwest, south winds that brought colder water into shore. So this is bringing in a lot of your salmonoid feature. You know, your trout and salmon are in shallower, in closer to shore. People getting up, I talk to a lot of people who fish from shore down the Milwaukee area from the local municipal and state and peers, and they've been doing very well, but it's a matter of getting up very early or fishing all night. But there are a lot of good shore fishing opportunities. As we get into the summer and you get more weeds, more weed growth, some of the shore opportunities will diminish themselves there, you know, quite a bit, and you won't find as many open areas. But if you look most places, like, you know, usually Wisconsin River, wading, this time of year you don't even need waders, a good pair of tennis shoes, you know, and go into water up to your knees, and you can catch a lot of fish in most of the rivers in Wisconsin. I'd highly recommend the Wisconsin River. Usually anywhere from Wisconsin Dells down to Sauk City, Prairie du Sac area, there's a great area for wading all along there. You'll catch walleye, sauger, smallmouth bass, a little bit of everything. So there are a lot of good opportunities for a shore angler.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, 48-inch muskie, not a bad fish.
Not a bad fish. And he had to, you know, the whole story is he went out before he catches his own bait. He caught a, you know, he was using alewives as his bait, you know, used a smaller hook, caught a five, 6-inch alewife, and then caught this big muskie. And there's been, a lot, muskie people are all catch and release now, and not too many people like to catch them. And I've seen some negative publicity about the young man who, you know, who caught the fish, and he happened to give it to some other people who he thought really needed the fish for food. And that's the whole story, and I can't throw any stones or any mud at anyone who does something like that. And I if you have the opportunity, I've firmly recommend, you know, having a graphite reproduction, getting a good picture, letting those fish go. But, you know, there are circumstances where I'm not going to get involved in saying something bad about someone just because they gave up some people who needed a meal, a fish.
You know, a few years ago, this goes back a few years, and it reminds me of our last caller's question about fishing from shore and fishing from piers. There was a great story about a young kid who had a kind of a hand line with a lure, and he was walking. He would drop the lure in the water, and he'd walk to the end of this public pier, dragging it along.
Walking trolling.
He was walking trolling, and then he'd turn around and walk back the other way on the other side of the pier, and he was doing that and caught a 40-inch muskie. Somebody happened to – he had it on, and somebody happened to be nearby and helped him get the fish in.
No, there are a lot. I mean, especially if you go out in low light condition, you know, low light periods of the day, early or late in the day or at night, most of your fish are going to, you know, fish are moving to deeper water structure this time of year, especially when you get water temperature in the upper 70s, close to 80 degrees. Most of your game fish have moved out to mid-lake structure, and they're doing their feeding a lot of the time at night, but they will move in shallow when they do that feeding because that's where they're going to find a lot of their forage and bait fish. So you just have to pick your times.
And one final comment on that. I think this year and many years I have catch more fish off my own pier.
So who needs a boat?
I have my boat sitting there, and I'm standing on the pier with my daughter. We're catching one bluegill right after the other.
Earlier in the year, especially in the springtime, before, you know, when we're talking about that April, May, before, you know, the open inland lake season opens, you'll find a lot of fish will be concentrated in that smaller, shallow water area, and you can find about any species there is up until we start getting into warmer water. But another thing to mention about that young man who caught the muskie in Milwaukee off the pier, they're trying to figure out where the muskie came from. And there's a possibility it could have come from Random Lake, which has a tributary that runs into the Milwaukee River. Or the other possibility is, did it come from Green Bay, where they started, you know, reintroducing in their restocking program, I think in 1989. But if that fish did come from Green Bay, it would be only the fifth fish that they have recorded that has traveled more than 12 miles from the original stocking site.
Yeah.
And this is over 100 miles, so it would be a rarity.
It'd be a real rarity. They don't travel very far, do they?
No. No, they have their home territories. And, you know, I mean, when you find muskie anglers can tell you, they'll know the spot where that one big fish is. And usually, unless they're caught or taking or something would happen, they'll return to that spot. They found a good area where they can lay an ambush. You know, they're the top of the predator and the top of the food chain list, and they'll find a good spot and hang out there.
Yeah, they absolutely will. Gary Engberg, our guest today, I have a great story about a probable world record brown trout that was caught, and we'll get to that story. But first, we're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be right back with Gary Engberg. You stay with us. Talking fishing today with Gary Engberg of Mazamani, professional fisherman and guide. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. If you have a question about fish or fishing, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have a question about water or water quality. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. If you're not getting through, just keep let it ring. And we'll get you on the air. If you're trying to get on, just call, let it ring, and somebody will be there eventually to answer the phone for you. And I wanted to mention the Baraboo River, Gary, because that's been a real success story. We just released some sturgeon there, and
I was up there. I think it was a week ago, and they had the Baraboo River. First of all, originally had a lot of, you can go back into the 1840s, 1815 areas, had a lot of little private dams on it, mainly for, you know, feed mills, grist mills, and such. Finally, and now the Baraboo River is a free-flowing river. All these dams, even there were a couple private dams, have been taken down, and now it had silted in. It was a muddy bottom, very few fish species, very few minnow species. And in the last few years, the mud has gotten scoured away. You have a rock and gravel bottom. The number of fish species, I think, are between 30 and 40 different species. There's a very good smallmouth population, and it's a real good success story. But the DNR happened to have their new renovated, and the additions they put on in the Wild Rose Fish Hatchery is just fantastic. They've always raised the salmon and trout up there, and they're raising muskies, northerns, walleyes, but they had and lake sturgeon. They had some extra sturgeon, and these are only 1 to 2 inch fish. 6,100 were dropped in at seven different sites on the Baraboo River to try and get. This is not a full scale restoration project, but they were natural originally to those waters. The Baraboo River flows into the Wisconsin River, so we hopefully somewhere down the line. But we also said, Larry, before sturgeons reach their sexual maturity, they're 25 years old, so I know I won't be here.
Yeah, no, I won't either.
But it's a great story, and for people who want to go up there, especially this is another place where you can wade, you can fish from shore, good smallmouth population, big catfish, and you're going to have saugers, walleyes, everything in there.
On to Bob in La Crescent, Minnesota now. Bob, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, thank you both for taking my call.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Gary. I have two questions, if I could. One is, does the state have an internet address where one can go on and get a fishing report on the different areas of the state and the larger bodies of water?
Yeah, I think it's w.dnr.gov. There's a state newsletter that comes out every week that you can find online. Or if you would just go to Wisconsin DNR, you would get Google that, and you'll get. There's an up-to-date fishing report that they put out every week. I think it's Bob Holton.
Yeah,
Bob Holton does it, and you have it divided into, you know, geographical regions throughout the whole state, and they give you a pretty good idea. And you could always go to Gary Engberg Outdoors, my website, and I have fishing reports for northern Wisconsin, the Great Lakes area, the Madison area, all around the Midwest and Wisconsin, too.
Appreciate that.
Thank you. One other
question. I find it difficult to find lakes that are managed for walleyes. I know the resorts don't want to tell you that a certain lake is managed for, let's say, muskie only. Mm-hmm. And it's always difficult to get that information. But how would one find it? If you're not interested in muskie fishing, I'd rather fish, say, in a lake that's managed for other fish.
Well, if you would also going on the websites, and if you do a little searching there, you can find stocking reports and the number of fish and what species are stocked in about every lake there is. I know in Wisconsin. Now, I'm not exactly sure on Minnesota, but you know, you can find out all those statistics.
Yeah, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, right on their website.
They have a super website. I mean, you can find about anything you want on there, and you can find up-to-date stocking reports for anywhere in the state of Wisconsin.
How would you evaluate stocking reports? Let's say that they stocked 1,000 walleyes in a certain lake. That would be like nothing relative to whether they stock, let's say, 5,000 muskies. Well, they may stock both, but you don't know which one they're managing it for.
Well, you can tell. You can see in Wisconsin, at least, you can, you know, states are Class A, Class B, Class C as far as your muskies go.
Oh.
So you can find out, you know, how they're rated, whether or not there's natural reproduction. In our Madison chain of lakes here, walleye and muskies both are totally dependent on stocking. Fish may go through a mock spawn. They'll move up a couple of the creeks here into some of the smaller lakes. People think they're spawning, but there is no verified reproduction for walleyes or muskies in area lakes here in the Madison area. But the main thing that, as far as success on stocking, it depends on the size of the fish. If you're putting in little fry that are an inch or so smaller, the survival rate is, I'm sure, probably less than 10%, versus when you're putting in fingerlings that are maybe 3, 4, or 5 inches, and then with muskies, you're talking about maybe 12 to 15 inches,
right.
Their chances of survival are so much greater.
I understand. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Anne in Venice, Florida. Your turn. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I'm calling. Well, one, I'd like to know how to spell your website so I can check that out.
All right. It's GaryEngberg Outdoors. GaryEngbergOutdoors.com.
And just, outdoors.com.
And there's fresh posts, there's a lot of pictures, if you look on it, there's an amazing amount of stuff.
Terrific. Well, we're up in Wisconsin for a couple of months outside of Madison for this summer, and our son wants to come up to visit, and we thought we might take a little side trip in the state. He loves to fly fish, and he likes any kind of fishing, but we'd like a nice place to go where we can have fun and he can fish.
Send me an email to my address, and I could put you in touch with a couple of excellent fishermen who fish the southwest part of Wisconsin, our Driftless area, which is some very, very good trout waters. And I can, hook you up with some people to tell you some areas to go, especially if a person's a fly fisherman.
Okay, all right. So is your email on your website?
Yeah, there's a contact form there, and you can get a hold of me.
Okay, terrific.
Thank you.
Will do.
Bye-bye.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jack in Milwaukee, let's turn to you now. Hi, Jack.
Hi. I have a question. Last year, we caught a 30-some-inch northern that looked like it was blind. It had it looked like it was in fairly decent, you know, physical condition, and it was swimming by the pier, so we netted to take a look, and it looks like the eyes were clouded. And I was wondering, is there some kind of virus that could be going around?
That's very possible. And also, too, I think in the past, people used to, you know, particularly take northerns and muskies, and they would hold them by their eyes. That's the last thing to do. You have a protective mucous membrane over all the fish.
Okay.
I mean, even if you're touching the fish in any part, you should always make sure your hands are wet. Otherwise, you'll take off that mucus and you'll leave a hand imprint.
Yeah, well, aren't very many muskies in this lake. So that was, the year before we caught a lot of them, and most of them were returned because, that's just the way we do it, And another question.
See, that wouldn't be the.
It never had crappies in it until about 5 years ago. So somebody must have introduced crappies. The DNR said they didn't do it.
Someone just dumped a bucket of them in.
That the rate of reproduction and the size growth has been just phenomenal. They went from, small 8-inch crappies to 14 inches. And I was wondering, is that going to affect the rest of the population in the lake to a greater extent, or is it just that these crappies are just eating excess minnows and...
Well, it depends on basically how large the forage base is. But basically, I would think they would be taking someone's place somewhere in the food chain.
Originally, the lake had been managed, I believe, for walleyes. You know, the DNR stocked walleyes in it that make it a walleye lake.
I mean, it could be a very fertile lake that has a lot of forage, but sometimes, usually, when you have another fish species will all of a sudden take off, they're kind of, I think, pushing out another species. And, you know, because there is in that food cycle and food chain, you know, there's room for everyone, but if you lose, like on the gizzard, we lost some gizzard shad on the river. I think emerald shad have replaced them. Usually there's another species that'll pick up the slack.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because the place we go to, it's been in the family for 50 years, and nobody ever caught a crappie until 5 years ago.
Yeah. Someone snuck a bucket in and been dumping a few buckets of crappies in there or something, you know. But
yeah.
If the DNR didn't put them in there, I think someone did it on their own.
Right, but would they reproduce like in 5 years? I mean, to go from, you know, a couple 3 inches long to 14 inches.
Well, they grow relatively quick, so I mean, you could have a sizable population in 5 years.
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Tony in Oak Creek. Your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Yeah, my question or comment is, I do a lot of fishing on Lake Michigan, and if that seems to be where the invasive species start from, wouldn't it make sense to put some washout, possibly a hose with water? It seems everybody pulls out of the lake, and because there's not many weeds, away they go. Does the DNR have any plans to do something like that, and would it be beneficial?
I'm not sure on their plans. Originally, back in the early 1990s, when I was, you know, on the trail fishing tournaments every week, at Lake Erie, they initially had, you know, zebra mussels and a lot of invasives. And we would stay, there's a group of islands called the Bass Islands in Lake Erie. We would stay on the islands. Before we could even leave the islands in the state of Ohio, we would have to have a chlorine, you know, washdown for our boats.
Right. Seems to me that would make sense to install something like that, at least the Port of Milwaukee.
It's probably a matter of money and economics right now. But I think that, I mean, it's a great idea. And I, you know, send a letter. That's what we have, you know, our elected officials for.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Keith in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Keith.
Hey, good afternoon. I was wondering if you could explain to me the rules and regulations on willow cats on the Mississippi River and the neighboring states.
Well, as far as I know, and willow cats, I know that you could not import them from any other waters. Like, I know people who were fishing a tournament, this is a year or so ago, and they wanted willow cats. They could only get them a couple. They had to lock through a couple dams to be able to get them, and I think that was legal. They could bring them if they never left the water. Now, I don't think you can import them from other states, especially now with the VHS, with the strict regulations right now. I don't think that would be legal. And the best thing to do would be to check your rules and regulations, mm-hmm. or just go to the DNR website, because you know someone will gladly get back to you. Get a hold of the fishery director for your area of the state.
Okay, say I was fishing out of got bait in Winona.
Oh, you'll get bait.
Like Fulton City.
A lot of times you'll buy bait and there'll be some willow cats even mixed in and with what, you know, let's see, we're getting fatheads or chubs. You know, you might have a few willow cats in there that'll sting you when you put your hand in for a minnow.
There you go. Thank you, Keith. Thomas in Manitowoc. Let's turn to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hello. I have a bit of a technical question we were discussing here. If you were out in the boat, and let's say you caught a bass and you had it hooked in the mouth, and a muskie came up and he was holding on to that bass, and it turned out to be a world record muskie, and you worked it into the boat and you got it into the net, technically, could you keep it, and would it qualify if the muskie was not hooked in the mouth?
I see. So if the muskie was just holding on to the bass.
Yeah.
I think it probably, I mean, the bass would have to be a legal bass and be part of your daily limit, would be part of it. But I know that a lot of people use bluegills for fishing for catfish on the river. And if it's a legal bluegill and they put them on a regular bank poles and they catch, you know, big fish that way, it's a good question. I'll do some research on it or check the DNR website. But I think it would be legal if it was so too. You know, as long as it's, you know, like you said, hooked in the, you know, in the mouth or in the, you know, the face area.
Yeah, but if the bass has the lure in his mouth and the muskie is just hanging on to it, then technically he's not actually caught on the hook and line because he's not hooked. And if you didn't have the bass in the boat,
Yeah, I understand your question.
Be part of your daily bag then, because you never touch them. So I was just wondering that if that ever happened to a person.
I've had a lot of bringing in a fish, like bringing in walleyes or a smallmouth, and I've had muskies hit them a lot of times. And what they usually will do is they'll just hold on to them, and then they'll finally let go. But it does happen fairly regularly.
But we'll have to research.
We'll do a little research on there, and I'll talk to a couple of wardens and ask on that one too. And like I said, you can always get back to me and ask me a question, and I'll find out the answer.
Thanks
a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way. We have open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And I did mention in passing before our news break that we had a world record brown trout last Friday morning at the Salmonorama.
Yeah, Larry, the biggest fish that had been caught till this fish was caught in the salmon tournament was a little over 20 pounds, but Roger Helen of Franksville caught a 41-pound, 8-ounce brown trout. It was 40.6 inches long, 27-inch girth, caught it trolling off a wind point and 40 feet of water. And the previous world record was caught just last September in the Manistee River in Michigan. It was caught by a gentleman casting a Rapala. This fish, I think, would be, you know, a few ounces heavier, and I think it's going to be a pending world record.
Let's go to David in Mondovi. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd just like your guest to comment on this observation. It seems to me, and you alluded to it earlier, that fishing has become kind of an elitist sport. For example, I go fishing with my son, and I catch a 3-pound largemouth, and my son is 4 years old, and we're going to have it for supper. And fishermen berate me and charge my boat and swear and all of that. And then I go musky fishing up north, and I catch a musky, and when I catch fish, I choose to eat them. And it seems that there are musky fanatics that feel you can eat everything except a musky, and likewise walleyes and smallmouth and so forth. And I wonder how it came to be that as long as you're operating within the law, you can still be berated and looked down upon for harvesting fish.
Well, on muskies, and as long as it's a legal fish, I mean, everyone has the right to, you know, to take a fish if they're going to, especially if they're going to use it and eat it. The main thing I know that on muskies, it's not a particularly good eating fish, for one thing. But if a person, you know, if you're eating for subsistence, I have nothing against that. It's just that muskies take so long to reach their size, to reach a large size, that you're taking a major fish out of the population that would be reproducing in a lot of waters, a lot more fish, because muskies can live to be quite old.
Pretty old.
But I mean, I know that it gets a little bit out of hand as far as people, you know, there is maybe an elitist attitude as far as what you can keep and what you cannot keep. And, you know, I'm for higher size limits. I'm trying to get on the Wisconsin River. It's a 34-inch minimum for muskies. A lot of muskies are in the, you know, mid-40-inch range. We've tried to get a resolution before the Natural Resources Board to try and raise that up to 45 or 50. Like the Bay of Green Bay, you know, you're talking about 54 inches up there for muskies. Smallmouth bass, you know, I don't eat them myself, but, you know, there's some people like them. Walleyes are the same. Some people catch and release everything that they catch. And, you know, the thing is, I just don't like people particularly catching fish when fish are spawning and on their beds. That's one of the main things that I am against, you know, especially even panfish, because I don't care how many fish there are in a lake. You can outfish a lake.
Yep, there you go. Thank you, David, for calling.
And that was Larry. We were talking before about the slot size, which we were having on a lot of lakes, and it's done well all over the country. And a group I belong to is the NPAA, and that's a professional anglers association. We've fished tournaments of many, many years of the best fishermen in the United States, years fishing all over the country. And the lakes where we have slot sizes, like Lake Wisconsin is an example, you can keep fish between 15 and 20 inches. No fish between 20 and 28, 1 over 28. The slot sizes work excellently everywhere. There's research that will prove that. Even on Lake Winnebago, which is probably a walleye factory, one of the best fishing lakes, they took off the minimum. There's no minimum there, and the walleye fishing has gotten better because people are happy if they catch a 13 or 14 inch walleye. They still can take a few fish home to eat, and it's not hurting the overall population.
On to Terry in Madison. Hi, Terry.
Hey, what's up?
Fish.
Fish, you bet. Hey, I was wondering about the spoonbill catfish population, and is there ever going to be a season opened up for them?
I don't think there will be a season in Wisconsin. If you go out to the Dakotas, there's in Missouri River, there's a season on the spoonbill. They're pretty more like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife are the ones who do a lot of the work here in our area on those, and they're relatively common. You know, they've had a few die-offs mistakenly when people were netting rough fish out of the rivers where they had some of these in a pen and they had a few die in the past. But I don't think you'll ever see. Most of the fish are caught snagged anyway, and I don't think you'll ever see a season in this state.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your information.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling, Terry. Joe in Richland Center. Hello.
Okay. Early in the program, you mentioned about the minnows not being trapped in the Wisconsin River.
Correct.
So you got to buy the bait. So where these minnows come from, and who is doing the testing to make sure they don't have VHS as well?
All of the bait suppliers or the wholesale bait dealers have to have their facilities are tested regularly as far as for disease and for viruses. And if you go fishing on a body of water and you're leaving that body of water, you are required to dump those minnows out and put them in a bag and put them in the garbage because you can't transfer minnows from one body of water to the other.
There you go. And fishing has no boundaries in the last minute or so here, Gary. That's a great...
Great, great group. Started originally 20-some years ago. A good friend of mine helped David Kuhn up in Hayward. Now Eagle River has one, a great one just a couple weekends ago in Madison. They had 100 participants, 300 volunteers helping. They have a great time every year. Go to their website, Fishing Has No Boundaries. I think they're in... 15 states now, but I know that there also are a couple of groups in the Winnebago area, and like I said, Eagle River, Hayward, and Madison. But it's a great group, gets a lot of disabled people who never have a chance to fish on the water, and you'll never see smiles like that.
And fishing, just one more thing, learning to fish, there are organizations out there that are going to help with that as well.
Oh, the Hera Fishing Club is a great group here in Madison. People should talk to them, contact them. I don't care what your age is. There's people there who would love to take you out fishing and introduce you to the sport. There's no, I mean, men, women, children, join the group. The Hera Fishing Club, they have a nice website. A lot of great people. They meet on, I think, the first Tuesday of every month, and then they have outings during the summer. But it's a great group.
And to Gary Engberg, thank you so much. Go to GaryEngbergOutdoors.com for a look at his website and all the things that he does. And thank you so much for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.